She passed away suddenly. So we burned a CD, and we didn't do the transcript. We just burned the CD. We gave it to the family. The family was so excited because their grandchildren could hear her voice.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things.
That's true.
And what we want you to do now is just give us your name, your age, and we want you to give us permission, verbal permission, that will allow us to capture your image, record the material. We're going to keep it at LSU. Roy works for a national program. It's going to go on their server. We're going to put one at ULL. And the whole purpose is the wetlands has changed dramatically. You're the one that can tell us that. So first of all, what's your name?
Freddie McTernan.
And how old are you?
78. Well, I'll be 78 October.
And do we have your permission to record this material and put it online and let other researchers and individuals use it?
Yes, sir, you do.
What I'd like to do is begin by telling us where you grew up.
I was born in Lockport, by Little Hoop. We lived on the side of Lake Salvador, on the southwest side of it. There's no community there. My father had a little houseboat, so during the trapping season, he would run it into the marsh, and we stayed there while he trapped the land all up in there, which is Golden Ranch now. And to Lake Salvador. Man, I need to come here. I need my binoculars.
Okay. All right, the southwest over in here. That's upside down.
Yeah. Let's bring it up.
All right.
Right side up. Okay. Lake des Almonds.
Lake des Almonds right here.
No, I'm not in Lake des Almonds. I'm
Lake Salvador. Salvador. Okay.
Yeah, I was wondering. I didn't see the. Okay. This is the way to get to hit in the coast over here.
Uh-huh.
See this body here?
Yep.
Now, we live about right here.
All right.
And this is
Lafitte?
Lafitte.
And Barrett.
Wait a minute. By Piro, or yeah. I went too far. We lived right here.
All
right,
perfect. And it was a houseboat?
And it was a houseboat. Pull up on the marsh.
And how old were you when you lived in that?
From 1 till about 6 years old. Then we moved to Lafitte.
All right.
And
you moved the houseboat to Lafitte?
Yeah.
Well,
we're living on the houseboat.
All right.
Okay.
Yes.
We moved to Lafitte. I was, like I say, about 7, 8 years old. And, when we moved there, I was about 3 or 4 years old. Excuse me.
All right.
And I was on the back porch and had some children swimming, young, 10 to 15 years old, you know, they were swimming there. So as a baby, I was crawling or walking around, and I fell off. I decided to dive off the porch. And one of them, my mother hollered for me. I wasn't nowhere around. I was under the porch, but in the water, you know.
Yeah.
So he come up, then he grabbed me by my hair, and he pulled me in. Otherwise, this is where I was born in Lockport, but this would have been where I would be dead. So then we trapped there for a while, but then we moved back to where my father was from, by the Almonds. See, on this western end of the lake, northwestern end. And see where it says Commodell mm-hmm. Village?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was a village where they raised cattle and all back here. And we was in a place called Tête de Mort, French. It was the head of the dead. Anyway, it was Indians had lived there before. And there was that burial ground. The biggest burial ground they had was the Temple Big,
mm-hmm.
right here,
mm-hmm.
at the end of this bayou. And Yeah. I mean, it's a bar right here. It was about 35, 40 feet high, and she was 120 feet around, you know.
So, they wound up moving all the way down off. I think most of them moved to this area, somewhere around here. So, my dad was born and raised right here.
In Commondale?
Yeah, next to Commondale. Between Commondale and Valle Gorge.
Right here.
Yeah. Now, I live right here.
All
right. Right on this, almost the end of the road in Valle Gorge.
Now, did they take the houseboat when they got to Valle Gorge and just pull it up on the land and that was your house?
No. In fact, they did pull it up, but then my father gave it to my grandmother.
Okay.
She stayed in it. And he built the house right over here. A pretty big house, you know. And he was crabbing then and fishing. You know, he crabbed during the summer and all. And sometimes during the winter, but during the winter he went crabbing. Crabbed Golden Ranch.
Now,
that's just it.
Where did he take his fur? Where did he take his fur? You know, he trapped him. How did he get his fur to market?
The man came and picked him up.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, he come and pick him up in Valle Gorge. And when he was, you see this distance here?
Here's Valle Gorge.
No. Commondale Village.
Uh-huh.
When he used to go to school, he had to row his skiff, all the way here to the Zounds. It's about 7 miles.
Really?
Rowing his skiff to go to school.
Was there ever a school in Carmondale?
Once, a long time ago, we had one. They had one, but then they moved it to the Zounds. For what reason? I don't know. But you see all this land around here, around Commondale?
Uh-huh.
All this, I hunted there as a young man, and later on too. And we used to go back in this marsh, you know, and ridges in it, and we seen barbed wire fencing all the way around there. I said, what did he need that for in the middle of this number marsh, swamp, water? It wasn't like that before. The land had to sink. It wasn't washed out here. It just went down.
And it was cattle in there.
They had cattle, you know, all throughout this area here. And this, like I said, I'll jump back to where I was as a child. It was over here. We used to go to, we had a school later on when I grew up, not when my father. My father went to the Zalmans when he was young, but when I was young, they wound up putting a little schoolhouse right here.
In Valle Gorge.
Yeah, it went up to the third grade grammar school. Anyway, we used to be in the classroom often, and the teachers would want to know to pay attention to what she was saying, because we was looking out the back door, because my father would come in with all these logs, you know, cypress logs, out of Lake Salvador. And, you know, it was a question. We wanted to see how many he had, you know, that quite a few was in there. So, she, you know, knew wanted us to pay attention and not be looking out into the fire. So it's kind of hard to
Your
do.
Your dad was getting sinker ciphers?
Sinker ciphers. Here's what they did. I'll use this in a
minute. Sure.
All through this here and here, they used to cut little, you could see where they drug the cypress out.
Mm-hmm.
You still can see it. And they would bring it first, a bunch of them, one year. Then they waited till the next year. That way it was dead and it was dry. So they would cut it down and then would tow it over here. Come all the way to here and go to Hawley. Let's see, Lafitte. From Lafitte, Not Lake Cotawatchee. I know where that's at. They went to Lafitte.
And then up to
Harvey. I mean the Harvey. Right here. See this thing? Right along here.
Do you remember the name of the mill at Harvey?
I don't know if Radbourne had it then or not. That's who has it now, I think.
Okay, all right.
Radbourne Lumber Company. Anyway, they would bring it here and they would saw it up. But by coming across Lake Salado, you used to chain from one log, the front of one log, to the back end of the first log. You know, they used to have strings of cypress trees, which we call logs, and they used to come across there. But when the weather got real bad, it would break loose these logs on it. Sometimes you would find one, sometimes two or three, sometimes a whole 10 or so, you know, in the back of it. That's about all they could pull across there. It would sink to the bottom of the lake, which is most places 7 feet. And after it sunk down there, the sand covered it up, you know, in dirt, mostly sand. And it wasn't all the way covered up. They had some, wherever they tied it along, they had some wedges mm-hmm. to tie it on top of it. And most of the time they were sticking up. So my dad took two small skiffs, Brig and Stratton or whatever it is, 5-6 horsepower, and they would tow one of his crab lines. He would put extra chain on it to stay on the bottom. And they would drag a certain area, put their poles and drag a certain area in the lake. They caught a heck of a lot of them up in this area. But they caught them all over the lake, but a lot of them up in here. And when they got them, you know, like I said, there was some. When they got them, he come there with a 34-foot, same size boat I had. No. And he had this big, like, ice hook, mm-hmm. you know, I was a big one that could go across this thing. And we used to go down the anchor rope, because it's pretty deep. It's hard to swim, and then if we lose too much, we go faster going down the anchor rope. And or sometimes the hook, we could pull ourselves down with the hook, and then we had a sledgehammer. And we used to drive those hook into the tree, into the log, drive him, and then he would pull slowly on it and wheel wash him until he got the sand would come off, and then the log would float on up. The log dried himself on the bottom of the lake. The water made him sink to the bottom, and then the sand dried him off, being it was covered up. And sure enough, once you wash that off, up popped the log. Some of them had holes, you know, that had gotten bad, the center of it. And we used to find great big catfish, 15, 20, 30 pound cats that was inside that used for laying. And it was quite something as a young boy to see big catfish coming out of it.
Now, did your dad ever commercially hunt?
I think so. He worked as a guide bringing people up.
Really?
In Seminole Pond a lot. They would just use P-Roads then. And he used to bring people hunting.
Now these were primarily New Orleans?
New Orleans, most of them. And he used to bring them hunting. I don't know what they gave him for that charge so much. But we all hunted. We hunted for dinner table, you know, whether it was rabbits, deer, or ducks. I really enjoyed duck hunting myself. I hunted when my folks later on in life, they had went back and they stayed in a camp. You see what it said, Bayou McThermy?
Yeah.
They stayed in the camp right there on this bayou. It was kind of high, maybe about 5-6 foot above the water, which is high to us, you know.
Yeah.
So they stayed up there. They had a camp there, and he did that after we had moved in Yarlin. This is after he had left this area 30, 40 years, he came back, and he did some trapping again. He felt that he wanted to trap. But then he would crab also.
Why did he go to New Orleans?
He went to New Orleans because he stopped working for the Gulf Seafood Corporation with his boat. It was a wide 56-foot boat. He got a big charter engine, paddle wheel, and he stopped working for them, but it went so slow to go from Harvey all the way to the Grand Isle, you know, and alongside Manila Vigil and Ahi and George Lung, and yeah, you know, that's all different platforms. So they put a big 471 Detroit. That was big to them. I have an 871 that's exactly double in my boat. And anyway, he was making those runs. We were bringing diesel, we were bringing lumber to repair these big platforms, because these platforms was about more than a block square. I'd say they're more than almost 2 blocks square, you know, and it was made, you know, way above the marsh, about 7, 8, 10 feet above the marsh. And it was made with these bolt type, you know, the frame, the way we made it. Imagine an air base, but like a bunch of hills on the top. That's what it's constant. We had the place where they used to ball, the big steam baller. And then they would take them and spread them out over the whole platform. When the rain come, they had to hurry up and brush them toward the top of the hill. Top of the hill, the wooden hill now. And then put the tops on top of it. All it was a wooden deck, you know. But imagine when built out of wood, a block and a half square. That was a lot of lumber. In fact, we worked on it. I worked in it. Mud, boy, that mud stuff, salt water mud. Anyway, he did that. That's why he moved to New Orleans, because he used to go. There was on, I don't know if she was the kid. Can't remember, St. Louis Street.
Yes.
Away from New Orleans. That's just where the office was. You know, they used to trip to Chicago from there. Then anyway, he used to go there, and he had a big panel truck, and he used to go and pick up the men that worked on his platform, mostly alcoholics, you know, down on their luck and what have you, all sitting on the side of the street and all. So he used to go there, and he would have, you know, a couple of cases or a case of wine. And he used to tell them, if they get in the truck, he'd give them one of them bottles of wine. So they used to get in the truck. He told some of them that had went before that he'd take them to the Chinese platform. And then he would go to Harvey, where he had his boat parked, with the truck, from the Orleans to Harvey. And anyway, from there, he would give them another bottle of wine if they get on the boat. Once they got on the boat, that's it. They was going on to that platform. So in a way, it sort of Shanghai'd them. But it did them good, because they used to eat real good. We ate breakfast when they used to eat at 10 o'clock and at 2 o'clock. That's how the Chinese did that. They had the eggs and all. Most of them gained weight when they went out there, even though they worked. And someone was looking forward to going back out, you know, after coming in and staying in the arms for a while and getting bad off again, you know. So they would, but when they got out there, they couldn't get no wine or nothing. They can get all the food they wanted, but that's it. And they would stay there, I believe. I don't know if it was a month or 2 months. I think it was more like 2 months you had to stay. and you would bring him back in. So that went on. He worked for them. He worked for exploration, you know, with his boat, you know, looking for all. We had moved to the Irish Channel.
Go ahead.
Close to the river, around Jackson Avenue and Russell Street, which is the last street to the river. And we stayed there a good long while. We bought a house there. And then later on, he bought another house. He was doing well with the exploration company. Bought another house on Camp Street, duplex. And then we moved with there. And then he quit. He had went to work doing something, and he says he couldn't take this. He was used to being the captain or in charge of something. Anyway, he had somebody tell him what to do. That didn't go with him. So he said, the heck with this. He'd come back out, back to the bodyguard, and then started the crapping all over again. And I went to school, one of the McDonald's school in New York. And then from there, I went to Easton to finish my high school. And from there, I went to Delgado. I went first for pipe fitting. And then I went for blueprint reading and sketching. And then I went for mechanical drafting, but I didn't stay the whole term. You know, I stayed 1 year because I was working shipyards. And most of the men in the shipyards couldn't read a print. So then we had layout men. That's what I was doing. Besides, I worked as a ship fitter and a welder. But then I started working as a layout man. You know, I lay out from the print all the lines where they had to put the bulkheads and all the framework. And
what shipyard? Avondale?
I worked at American Marine on Industrial Canal. I worked at Avondale a long time. I worked for the other ones, Buck Creek and Price. They're the ones that used it. Both, they worked on ships when they come in there. And so
well, I want to go back and have you talk a little bit more about the shrimp drying platforms. I'm trying to visualize.
The shrimp drying platform, like I said, it wasn't all the way to the way we ball shrimp. It seemed like before it got real ball or something, they would put them out. That's where they could put them out. And it took 3 days to dry the shrimp on a normal sunny day. But when they had rain, it took longer, you know, that's what they had to be balled. They just couldn't put them out like that. Except for the big shrimp. These are all the small ones. The big shrimp, they had a mallet and used to mash those shrimp flat with the shell, you know, the skin on the shrimp and all. And they used to put them out in the sun. And that was big money for them.
What about the fish?
The fish. They used to have these guys in about a 16-foot skiff and go out there with a line, but no bob on it, just a hook like this. They didn't have that one to, so the fish couldn't unhook. They used to go out there with a line and cane pole, and it would be right around St. Mary's Point. Oh, wait a minute. In a different place, yeah. They put it out.
Just a minute. All right, we're going the wrong way.
Yeah, that's good. Going to Slidell. I shrimp all throughout that area, too. I used to go to Harvey.
All right. This Barry Terry.
Barry Bay. Terry Bay. What is Lafitte?
Oh. All right, you're not going to... Lafitte's up here.
Yeah, you see that's what's wrong. Where Lafitte comes up. It would be on a point.
All right.
Somewhere up in this area. Anyway.
Okay. St. Mary's Point?
Yeah. We Ping Wing is the name of the platform, by the way. Ping was a little short man, skinny, with wooden shoes. You can hear him a half a block away coming. He was a ornery type of guy. Wing was just the opposite. A man about your size. And he was friendly as could be, you know. But Ping
That at my 40 used to give him all kind of trouble. You know, he used to mess with him because he, he get so frustrated right away, you know.
Now, did they speak English?
Well, they spoke some English. I remember one of them, my mother made a trip with us and my sister. Anyway, we went on the boat and we were by this high heat. Anyway, he wanted to come in and please yourself. Come in and piss on yourself. That's what he said. You know, he didn't know what the heck he was saying. I think that's how he went. So, you know, they didn't talk good English, that's for sure.
But now we're catching...
Neither do I.
Now we're catching fish without a barb.
Without a barb. And this is all beautiful speck. And they would load up that plump full. They had that much, that 16-foot open hull skiff. It was full when they come back. I seen the hull. I said, boy, they're going to sink. You know, the boy, I said, how can... They had so much fish in there. The fish was that plentiful. Now, the shrimp they used to buy, like I said, they had this straw basket. And it was made like in a cone. Like an ice cream cone, except the bottom was about maybe 15 inches in diameter or so, and 24 inches up there at the top. And it was about 3 foot high. That was $7 worth of shrimp. That's how cheap the shrimp was then. But, you know, that's small shrimp. 70, 80, 80, 100, you know, that size shrimp. The big shrimp, they got more for it. I don't forget how much it was. But we were shrimping the size, bringing the boat out there. And we had brought the ice. And we furnished, we used to bring enough diesel and ice that we used to furnish the shrimpers at full buy-in. That's a little bit east of Grand Isle.
All right, here's Grand Isle.
Full buyer should be here.
And this is Grandy Kai, so it's right about here.
Yeah, it's right on the right. It comes out here. See that right here?
Yep.
That's full buyer.
All right.
And you know, because that was a ways for them to come, so we used to pick up the shrimp and bring them their food, some groceries.
Now, what time period? About what time period are we talking about?
You mean years?
Yeah.
Roughly. I say I was about from 9 years old till about 16.
All right.
17.
So you were born in...
35.
So it'd be from 41. Late 30s to right up before World War II.
Yeah.
All right, good.
So that's... like I said, that's what we used to do, bring the fuel and the ice, whatever. But those trouts, they used to cling. They used to gut them, cut them to two gut them. And half of the intestine was still in there, the guts. They used to just dry them like that and salt them. I said, cool, I wouldn't eat that for nothing at all.
Now, name the platform. You don't necessarily have to show us, but name the platforms you remember.
Manila Village.
All right.
Then, Bahia Brulo. The Grand Bahia. You know, that's right close. And then Bahia Regal.
All right.
That's at Grand Isle.
All right.
So that's 1, 2, 3, 4.
What about Bassa Bassa?
Bassa, yeah, well, by Brulo is somewhere around Bassa
Bassa, all right.
Yeah.
Now, did the Chinese own the platforms or work on the platforms?
They owned it.
Then name some...
I don't know about the land.
But the platform.
Yeah, platform.
All right, now name some of the Chinese you remember at these platforms.
Just name them.
Wing,
Sahahi, and Dip. Mm-hmm. And that's somebody else, I can't remember that.
Right. Did you ever see a platform constructed?
Constructed?
Building. Here's what.
No, that was before my time.
All right, but you fixed platforms. I want to know.
Repaired them.
How did you put the piling down?
I don't think there was piling. There was posts.
All right.
Yeah.
And you just...
I don't know. They just pushed... We just pushed them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And they had boards. You push the piling, and you nailed your board, I guess, on the side.
All right.
That way you it wouldn't keep on going down.
Got it. All right.
They didn't jet them or nothing like we do now.
Just all hand labor.
All hand labor. No pile drive outfit, nothing like that.
And you were bringing diesel?
Diesel.
Food. And ice.
And ice.
So if you were trying to tell me how many buildings would be around...
Ooh, that's a large building where they used to put them in this big granulator. That's a big cage. About 8 by 10. It was real big. And maybe about 15, 16 foot long. They would dump the shrimp after it dried on the platform. They would dump it in there, and this thing would keep turning, and the shrimp would be bouncing almost like a regular clothes dryer, except it was square. And all the peelings would fall down. Now, the shrimp peelings in the head, when they fall down, they used to sack those up. You know, great big sacks of them. And bigger than the dry shrimp. Dry shrimp had 100 pounds in it. These here were bigger. I don't think they had quite 100 pounds, but it was hard to handle. I was handling those around 12 years old. That and the sacks of salt. I remember how heavy it was. My dad wanted us to get tools to carry about 300 or 400 foot from the dock where we had the boat to where the house was, where they kept the salt. And like I said, about 300, 400 feet. And two men trying to carry a sack of salt. You know how it would bend in the middle? Or two boys, that is. My brother was smaller than me. So I used to get him to help me put it on my shoulder. Then I would bring it, you know, all he did help me put it on there. That was a load for me.
Oh, you know, yeah. At
12 years old, 100-pound sack of salt. That's, yes. That's a lot.
Now, when your dad was working in New Orleans, Shanghaiing individuals,
yeah,
that meant that the platform had a lot of people on it.
Well, yeah, they had, they had 7, 8, 9 people each platform. All together, they had a heck of a lot of people.
Did they live in a dormitory, or did they live?
They had their house next to granulated. They had a couple of houses. Manila Village had a lot of houses, but it was people living there. You know, like trappers and fishermen and things, and they would naturally sell to the platform next door.
Now, do you ever remember any sailing vessels?
No, but. In Harvey itself, at Sun Shell, they had oyster boat come in, and there was Gualettes. That's a schooner. French name for a schooner. And that,
what's the French name?
Gualette.
Gualette.
Gualette. Hmm. Anyway, these Gualettes, you know, was made like the bow come way out. Some of them was pretty. Some had the clipper bow, you know, like in French. San Francisco, you know, when they made, this guy made one out of fiberglass down there already. You know, it wasn't the biggest, but they had used, because these boats were 50, 60 foot long. You know, the big sailboat, and they wasn't using sails anymore, they were using a diesel-powered engine.
Now, what company in Harvey?
Sun Shell.
Sun Shell, C-H-I-L-L.
Shell, yeah.
Sun Shell. But your daddy worked for...
Gulf Seafood Corporation.
That's the Skirmata family. Yeah, how long did he work for?
This was for Chinese. They had Chinese in the office.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that's for myself. Home is one of them. Yeah.
Really? In Harvey?
No. On St. Louis Street.
All right.
And the whole of it was the Pan Am diesel station we used to dock.
Right. On St. Louis.
That's right next to Sun Shell.
Kwong Sun company. QUANG or on St. Louis? Or was it? It was a Mr. Hoy, H-O-Y?
Hong.
Hong, H-O-N-G.
I think it had a hard
no, G. No, that, okay.
I think it had a hard, but it was Mr. Hong and somebody else, hard and hung, I think. I know one definitely was Hong. And, you know, they would have, Daddy would have the truck driver, then they'd use their own truck. He used his truck when he's going out with the men they used to pick up. But when we got in with the shrimp, they would send their truck from the office, from St. Louis Street to Harvey. And then they would bring it into them. And then they had that warehouse there. And then they would send it to Chicago.
All right, now, let's think about this shrimp drying for a moment. Do you remember when the shrimpers were not, they're moving from shrimp drying to taking shrimp to market, and they rented a flag on their boat so the buyers could find a boat. Do you remember that?
All I remember when he used to fly that flag for that 50 barrel when he got the bigger boat.
Really?
But we had flags. See, I didn't know what it was for, but they had flags on that boat.
All right.
You're right then.
Wooden boats?
Yeah, all wooden boats. And no steel then.
Who made them?
Themselves, the people in that town, Lafitte, Golden Meadow, you know, all over in there. They, you know, just a lot of people built it themselves, you know, the men could build them. They all were ciphers. You know, nothing else but ciphers. They had good ciphers for a while. That one we used to pick up out of the lake, that was real good, red ciphers. But then we still get growback ciphers. That's the one you have knots and, you know, it'll rot much faster. The red ciphers didn't rot. It lasts almost forever. That's why it was under that water for years and years.
What kind of motor did they use? Do you remember that you mentioned a Detroit diesel Caterpillar today? What was the motor's names back then?
The Lacrodash, the Charter engine. Of course, they had some later on. I was using, they had Wisconsin motor.
All right.
And Bergen Stratton.
With big flywheels?
Big flywheel. I had a Pettis diesel, you know, that's made in London or in England, let's put it that way. And I had bought it, came off of all drilling where they put bigger motors. It was a one cylinder, but they had a clutch on the back of it. I bought it for $100. And you know, like Brigham Strat was more than that then. And, I used to be able to put it in neutral. Because when they pick up a line, a crab line, before it started picking up a crab line, the front of the skiff had like a U with bites. You know, a bite net like this. And the line would come from the bottom with the chain and then come up here and come on a spool. Like a woman, three threads of the chain. Has a spool to me, and a lot of them use little air-cool motors and all, you know, to pick it up. But with this clutch, I got a little gearbox with some scrap in it. I went to town on the Industrial Canal, and I bought this thing here. I think I paid $5-$10 for it, because it was scrap, so it's supposed to be. And I had rigged it up where I could engage it or disengage it. Now, this really was a help to me, because they had a clutch in the back, too, you know, where I could put it in neutral, and my propeller would stop turning. And the lines, whenever we pick up crab lines in time, you're drifting with the wind, it would get caught in a stump, or maybe a log, it would get caught in it sometimes. And if you couldn't stop your motor, stop your boat in time, you'd break your line. I used to just hit the clutches. so that was a big help. Now, some of the guys, I guess the first guys, I tried to do it, but this used to stoop down in front of the boat. I can't stoop down, something with my legs. I can't stoop down as good as they do. And they used to pull it by hand like this while the boat run and put it in the basket. Sometimes I'm pulling like that and I got it all over in the basket on the inside and skipping part of it outside.
Now,
so that's why it forced me to rig up the spool so I could pick up my line that way.
Now, were you picking up a crab trap?
Trap, that's different.
All right.
They do that mostly.
But you were not picking up a crab trap.
Trap, nope.
You were picking up a hook with a crab on it?
No. A crab line. I thought you understood what that was. Crab line might run for a mile this way. Then we had some that ran across. Sometimes it was in a square. Sometimes we had it this from, say, north to south. And we'd start off on the south end and run a crab line. First, we put it out. You know, that chain, you went about 10 feet. Then you would put a chain in it, about 4 feet or so were the chain that would weigh the line down. And then the line itself would make a knot, a loop in there where if you put your bait in there, collets, that's what we use. Like sometimes you use the inner lip. Most of the time you had the inner lip was the best. You know, it's a tender. But the one with all the hair on it, we used to cut it in little pieces, little squares, about maybe 4 inches, 3 or 4 inches. And we used to tie it in there. Sometimes we made a little cut, you know, so it wouldn't come out when the crab was biting. But we had those at every, say, 4 feet, four feet or so. Sometimes maybe a little closer sometimes. But then it would run a mile there. And we used to use, some of them used 36 line, that's pretty small, and then some of them used 48, and my dad was using 60, because he rigged up a basket that would catch them automatic. He wouldn't have to catch them with this little net. We used to fish with a little net like a tennis racket, but all webbing in it, you know, like a shrimp trawl, you know, made but a little bit bigger hole because it was crab, and we used to, crab line used to come up. And it was coming up at an angle, 45-degree angle, or sometimes less than 45. And we used to see the crab come, so we used to catch it on the back. And then we used to come up. The force of the water kept the crab against the net. That's why she didn't get away. And that was on the back. She was upside down. And then we threw it in the basket. My dad took a net like this, and it was taped. Right here, had a steel ball he put. He built it out of reinforcement rods you used in cement. And then he had a smooth one that went across here that his line would go, would fall in. And he had another one where it would fall in here. This one was a lot bigger than this back. The front end, sometime it would hit, you know, it was way down. A lot of crabs, it would hit in the U. Sometimes it just would ride over, because this thing here was about on this angle.
All right.
And it had a little wall here, you know, mesh, about that high. And the line would go across here, and back here, that's where that other U was. Now, the crab line and the crab and the bait would come through here and would hit this U here. Now this was smaller than this one. And he used to hit it and the crab would fall off and the bait and the line would go through. And he caught up to 105 hampers of crab one day where everybody else was catching 30, 35 hampers. That was a normal day's crabbing.
What's the weight of a hamper?
I'll tell you how many dozen they had.
That'll work.
Big crab, they had four and a half dozen. The weight.
Four and a half dozen is fine.
Yeah, four and a half dozen.
average size crab. We had different areas that we crabbed because the crab used to feed, you know, on different things, just like the catfish. A white catfish would be on the north side of Lake Salador. Get back to Lake Salador.
Take me a minute.
Where it goes into Lake Catawachi.
All right. Lake Salvador into Lake Catawachi.
No. The white cat would stay mostly across here, the north side. It was a sandy bottom, almost like out here. Why it was sandy along here, I don't know. But it had little red worms on it, and the white cat would feed on those. Where the other one would be up southwest side. And a blue cat, eel cat, and yellow cats all would be in the bayou in the Lake Des Islands area. But the white cat, which was the best eaten cat, was along here.
Hmm.
That's why Dad used to fish some in winter.
Did he take his crab to New Orleans or Des Islands?
He took his crab to West Wego. That was a big crab. You got the West Wego Canal. They used to have the water stinking in that canal because of the crab. In other words,
that's West Wego. All right.
He used to go to West Wego, but he went there with his truck. He had two of them panel truck. He also had a nightclub that he could. This had come in right where the wharf two first started. He had his papers, like his brothers. Come on in. His brothers all went in the service. And he was supposed to go too. But when he went to West Wego and told him you won't be able to bring him any more crab, he said, well, I'm going to find out about this, the man that ran the crab. Somehow he got in with the army or whatever the draft board was. And he was bringing in so much crab meat, the canning meat for the soldiers, that they gave him a deferment.
Really?
So he closed his the dance bar, you know, because he's the only one that was getting beer. But he got beer then, because you couldn't get beer, like 4X Company on Jackson Avenue, that they're no longer in there. He used to bring in eggs, he used to take the fish and the crab for the guys with the eggs, you know, from the performers right there before you get to the diamond. And then he used to bring that to the beer company. That was rationing the eggs. So he did a lot of bartering. And the can is the same thing. He used to have a lot of candies for us.
So there was a crab cannery in West Wego.
West Wego.
Real.
And there's a joke on, well, I don't know, you actually pass. When other teenagers coming back to go toward this way, and you know, laying in the back in the back seat, God said, you know where you're at? Yeah, I know where I'm at. West Wego. The crab factory polluted the water, and it stinks so bad. Some of the guys with the wooden trawl boat used to go park that boat in there, because they had no oxygen in the water, and the barnacles didn't grow in there.
Now, let's go back to the boats a minute. Locals are making the boats, so your daddy or somebody's making a boat.
Yeah.
Where did they get the ciphers?
They got the ciphers from Braceland.
All right.
Robichaud
Lumber in Braceland. Yep.
308.
Right.
Most of it. They got from there, from Dufresne.
Yep.
They got some from him. And they had a little sawmill in Bayagos. He used to get some from him, too. The big cypress. In fact, that's where Daddy used to bring his cypress log to, Mr. Hogan.
Now, how long did you live in Bayagos?
From about 8 years old, I guess, till 10.
All right, now.
And then I moved back to it later on.
Now, If we look at DeZalman's, DeZalman's had a lot of crab processing. And there was an oyster house there. Am I right?
I don't remember that.
All right. Now, in DeZalman's, there's a Mennonite church. You remember that?
Nope.
All right.
I know the catfish dock they got. They always had catfish dock in DeZalman's.
Really?
Yeah. They buy most of the catfish. My cousin in racing used to buy them, too. And he would bring him to a man shack across to the big footprint. They had that big, forget the name of that big,
restaurant?
The big restaurant.
Mindendorf's?
Yep, that's it.
And then there was Spars.
Spars, yeah, well, Spars was on Highway 90.
90, yes.
They had one in Thibodeau, too. They finally put one in Thibodeau, probably after you left.
Yeah, yeah. Now, clearly you're involved in shrimping now.
Yes, I am. But I only went shrimping one night this season.
Really?
I went in there, and I did real good. I had 700 pounds with a big shrimp. I said, oh, we're going to have a good season. And they did. I'll come back a couple of days. I was over here. I said, I'm going to get my ice, and then I want to see exactly how much diesel, because I had some diesel in some tanks. And I said, I'm going by the pump so I can see exactly how many gallons I bought. Because that big boy down there, he's the one that comes with me. You know, I was trying to get a better figure for my how much fuel expense we had. So I went to the, and I got 31 baskets of ice, which is a lot of ice. We usually used to buy it in blocks, 300-pound blocks, crushed. But it comes in piece of ice, you know, the two ice machines you see there. So my boat was running good. So I started quite a few times just to run it, you know. But I ran it over there, and then I went. I said, now I'm going to the other end of this dock, which is not far here, but 250 feet or so. I'm going to go and put the fuel in. I hit my starter button, and the motor was turned over, but it wouldn't start. What the heck could be wrong? This thing been running good all the time. The shaft in the back of the motor that turns the blower on the motor and also turns your fuel pump, it broke. It stripped the teeth, that is. It's a spline shaft, and it stripped the teeth. It had happened before, and I said it couldn't be happening again because we put a brand new shaft in, but then that was almost a year before. But we did change another one of the gears with the other end that the spline shaft goes into, so that one must have been bad, so it caused the new shaft to go out much sooner than you would normally expect, but I didn't know that. So I took the breeder cap off, the engine cover and the breeder cap and all this, started investigating. Sure enough, my breeder, you know, blades wasn't turning, and I said, oh Lord, so I got somebody to push me on this side. Look at, I went from there to here. I wasn't along the Gulf somewhere like Kai Island, Timberlake Island, or somewhere where I was by myself, but I did have, you see this little cell phone?
Yeah.
That saves us fishermen. That we can call up each other. Your marine radios, the marine radios, you got so many people talking on it, and you have a lot of channels. Look, usually they're all full. Not as much, quite as much now, but the last 8-10 years, the amount of boats went way down. We don't have nowhere near the amount of boats now that we had before. And so we can talk to each other. If you're on a boat and you might be in two lakes away from me, and I'm catching good and I want to tell you, but I don't want to tell everybody else, so I'm not going to say it on the radio. I'll use my cell phone and call you direct. That way, now if we have any breakdowns, I can call over here to my neighbors, brother-in-law, or my friend's wife,
you know, I can get in touch with them. So that's very important to have one of these. My GPS, tell me where all this land was. Let me see what I can show you on it.
While we talk about the land.
You looking for where? Barataria?
Here. Well, yeah, by Rick, by people. Yeah, here it is. A little bit. Okay. See this canal? It existed.
Yep.
You see the shoreline here?
Yeah.
We had to go all the way across here, and then I had to come back here and go into this canal, the one that went in by St. Denis, like
right.
The Manila Village. We usually went right here then into Little Lake to Granby. But a trapper, who was also a shrimper, decided to cut right across here, a narrow strip of land, maybe it used to be wide, but it was about 40, 50 feet. So he took his dish machine and he went across there 3 or 4 times and cut it. Now, it's as wide as this bayou, and it must be 10, 12 feet deep, the current. That's why right now, on that end, it flood out much faster. This biopiro, just a wriggly, biopiro some places is almost as wide as the Mississippi River. This thing's got real deep too, it's around 17 foot or so deep on the side, way on the side, is not the marsh that washed away. That's why it looks like almost a lake instead of a bayou. But this man here caused it. All that current to come in from this Turtle Bay, yeah, right here, through this canal, which is deep too, and come up here to go all the way into Lake Salado and on up to the Zalmans and West Oswego, West Bank and all.
What's a ditching machine?
The marsh, just a little bit of grass and the soft mud that it grows on. Because underneath is water. They'll come across there, sometimes the water, it might be 2 foot where the mud and grass. But it's a big blade, almost like an airboat, except it's not an airboat. It's a little barge, like a square front boat, you can say. It's a little barge. And they put this big engine in it, and they turn around and have these blades. And when they start off, you see mud fly 30 small feet up. Air off the side. So a lot of it falls on the side, they go levered on the side. And they'll dig the canal. Every year they gotta go back through, but a lot of it starts growing back in. And we use that for trapping. The duck hunters use it. That's a ditching machine my uncle had. I'll cut trenosis. That's what we call it, trenosis with it. And that's fine, but we had a hell of a time in Lake Salado, Cross Point, right here, where it goes into the bay.
Yeah. Your daddy had a camp right there.
Well, he had a camp here.
Yeah.
And he trapped all the way up to here.
All right.
And anyway, the hurricane had put a lot of the oak stumps that, you know, broke the limbs. Some of the big limbs, almost like a tree. And he dumped it into the little ditches that we used to go around the trap. So we couldn't use the ditching machine. We used to have to use a big fork, like a hay fork, to throw the stuff, but it would work. Then we had to use passepartout, in French, a big saw. The guy used to saw trees. You saw that with a handle on each end. And we used to have to saw the thing. We had one with handle on each end, had one with no one. Just a handle on one end, depending on where we could use it. When we could use the two handle, we used the two handle. Can't use it, we had to use the, have to saw it up in pieces to pull it out by hand.
Now, when you were trapping, it's muskrat, nutrient, alligator?
Muskrat, nutrients, the alligators, we didn't, my brother trapped those now. He got airboats, he'd take people on airboat tour. He was down right before you get over the bridge. He'd take people all over the place, Europe, all come. You wind up getting about five of those air books. Had some of them made in Florida. He's really doing good with that business. He had a lot of people from Europe coming over here. People all over the United States coming. And he traps. He set out lines for alligators. And my nephew had one 15 foot or so high. You figure 6 foot twice and then some.
Now, who do they get their leases from?
The landowner. Well, wait a minute. The lease, you got to get through the landowner. Lucky do we have a relative that has them. And some other places that we got other landowners to lease it. And the tags you got to get from the state. You know, you get, I think you get like 35 tags or so. Depending on how much land, how many acres or more you get, or how many tags you get. You have to have a tag on every one of them. Just like our auction, you have to have a tag on every site.
Now, if you only fish shrimp, or do you fish shrimp and oysters?
No oysters.
Just shrimp.
Just shrimp.
How long have you been doing it?
I've been doing it while I was working. I was doing that. Let me see the age.
More than 50.
From 30 years old.
All right. To 80. 50 years.
Yeah.
Now, is this a fiberglass boat out here?
Fiberglass. Stainless steel. I bought all stainless steel out of the scrap yards. And I got it so much cheaper, you know, than you couldn't. I couldn't afford to buy that much stainless steel from a regular steel mill or steel dealer. And I bought it out of scrap yard, and I have the engine foundation, all my underwater strut that the shaft goes through and where the propeller is, and the rudder, all that stainless steel, all my rigging stainless steel. You know, I got it where I wouldn't have to chip. Like I'm old, which I'm old now. I wouldn't have to chip. Another one, I had wood boats. And forever having to caulk them and treat them with this antifoulin paint to keep the worms from eating them. And that's constant work and changing boards all over. And then I had that crew boat that I bought awful cheap. You know, the guy was quitting his crew boat. It was an old one, but I used it. But steel hulls, they rust out so fast. You know, if you make them real heavy, that's a lot of weight to push. My skin, my fiberglass is pretty heavy too, though. But the steel hull, you know, the electrolysis eats it. Static electricity in the water eats up that steel hull. Aluminum is much worse. We use a zinc anode plate. The aluminum got to use a magnesium anode plate, where it's a better conductor of electricity than aluminum, because aluminum is good for electricity. That's why the power plant, power lines are all a lot of aluminum. So I figured the only thing I get a fiberglass. Now the fiberglass, the sun affected a little bit, but if you keep it gel coat, painted good with that fiberglass gel coat, then it won't affect it. The rest of it's under the water and all. So it's almost like a brick house on a slab. My fiberglass boat's going to be here long after I'm gone.
Now, would you call that a Florida or a Biloxi? Or do you know those terms?
That's a regular skiff model.
All right.
Yeah, I have a cabin, just like that big one that just left, you might have seen going
out.
The Chosen One or something. That's a beautiful boat, but it's steel hull. That's all skiff model. We got cabin now. All our shrimpers are putting cabin on because we changed our method of shrimping. Instead of shrimping, pulling my nets, I still got my trawl bottom net, my trawl doors and all on it, which I used to like when we used to do that during the day. Now we have to go out at night. Now when you go out at night, You either got to go and stay a little bit longer out there. You can't run back in. you know, come back in. You can, some of the skiff run back and forth, but they spend a lot of fuel going back, almost as much as they do pulling the nets. So these skimmers, we skim all night, and then we'll want to go to sleep on the boat during the day. When there's a nice breeze, it's fine. You open your windows and all. But when there's no breeze, it'll get awful hot out there on that salt water. So we all put cabins on our boat, and we have generators, which I'm waiting that from Japan, and we use our air conditioner. That way we can sleep and stay warm, and got a place to shower in the back of my boat. So we had to almost make it like a cabin cruiser. It's from a Lafitte type skiff, we call it, because they got the fantail. So it's almost like a cabin cruiser now. Like this man that just passed with that chosen one, that's almost like a houseboat floating palace. He got all kind of room. I have a stove, I can bake biscuits in it. You know, I got my tank and all. I worked 4 years while I was working at a plant on the river to build this boat. You know, after work into the night, and then whenever the plant closed, then I was working on it full time.
What's the largest number of shrimp you've ever caught in one day, or however you measure?
One night. It wasn't nowhere around this area. It was in the Wrigley's, close to Slidell.
All right.
I went out. I wasn't feeling that great. You know, it's kind of dizzy like. So I said, I went in anchor. I said, darn it, I'm going to anchor off. I'm not going to push tonight. So my friend with the Blue Waters, that's a pretty boat, two big fiberglass ones. They used to go in the Gulf a lot. So he was out there with me. You know, from here we went and catch the intercoastal, and then we went through the Harvey Locks to come down with the river, with the current, to go to the Industrial Canal Lock. When we come back, we come through the Industrial Canal and go downriver again to the Bell Chase Lock, which ties in to the intercoastal that brings you to the Lafitte, you know, and on this way, all the way to here. So, anyway, in the Wrigley's, he turned around and come by me and start hollering at me. So the two guys, the one guy I had with me and the little boy, he says, somebody hollering at you. I said, yeah, that's Gilbert. And so he says, jumping up and down, his son. He said, come on, we're giving. I said, I'm going to sleep. Catch a lot. He said, you got to come now. So sure enough, in Lake Pontchartrain, I wish you had that on there. I'll show you exactly where.
You're at the Wrigley's?
At the Wrigley's.
All right.
See, I crawled Lake Bourne in the marsh.
All right.
Out of Wyckoski and all.
This is Lake Pontchartrain. Fort Pike. This is going out the Wrigley's. Here's Lake Bourne. Lake Catherine, Slidell's up here.
There's a bunch of trains. Good. Right. Okay.
This is I-10.
Yeah, this is where they got that Ford pipe. We tie up here.
All right.
We came over here, which is just a little short run, about 10 minutes. And I wind up right here. Anchored out here. Here, and he came from here somewhere. So all this area here, the shrimp came out of Lake Pontchartrain. The shrimp, this is where we
this is Fort Pike.
Yeah, and the shrimp come out of Lake Pontchartrain, and instead of going in here, this is Chef Pass. Sometimes they don't know whether to go this way or go this way. So they pile up in this area. Before they come in the Wrigley's. This is the Wrigley. This is the real deep water. Thank God I said that. Something like 80 some more feet of water there.
Wow.
They had a big cement thing here. I think it was a lighthouse. Yeah, lighthouse was here. But anyway, he told me that, so I picked up my anchor. This is a new subdivision. Beautiful. Real expensive homes here. along the shoreline. I come over here and I shrimp for 6 hours. I caught 2,500 pounds of 21-25 size shrimp in 6 hours. I mean, everything was full. And so I come back and sold that. I had never caught that much shrimp, you know, before. Nowhere near that much. And then once in Lake Felicity, I had caught not quite that much, but almost, you know, about 1,500 pounds or so in a day, you know.
Now, do you have one buyer you always take your shrimp to?
I usually try to sell retail my biggest shrimp, which is what I'm hoping to do with the white. They use the biggest shrimp, the beginning whites, and the small shrimp I'll sell to price right here across the buy.
Now, wait, is that the same? What's that's price?
Price, seafood.
The same ones that had a shrimp drying platform?
No. No, that's a guy in Montague.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had the shrimp. I sold to him a couple of times.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. He take his shrimp if they, you know, real small and all.
Now, when you try to sell wholesale or retail, how do you do that? How do you do that?
A lot of people that I know, like I started off when I worked for that plant. I used to bring in my shrimp that I catch. Of course, I wasn't catching that much in Lake Salvador. And look, I finally went into Barataria Bay. But they all knew I was shrimping and they ordered shrimp. But I only sell it by the ice chest, so I used to bring in a few ice chests, you know, sell it to them. Saved me going all the way to Lafitte. And I do the same thing here, you know, when I catch.
So you have people that come here to buy some of you directly at your building, or do you?
No. This last time, my grandson's friend knew that, so he took the shrimp with him and he sold it. So I don't know, I didn't meet any of them people. But there are some people that buy us from all those fishermen along here. You know, we get a little bit more than we do in the dock. Not that much more. Usually it just about covers the ice, because we got to re-ice and all.
All right.
You know, it's a little expensive, you know, to re-ice the shrimp and all.
Now, as you were growing up, which hurricanes do you remember?
The one in my room, the one, that's the one I come back in with from Demolay Island.
It won't be on here.
No, it's, you know, from Timberlake Island, I was in my boat and I was riding fast and the wave was coming in, you know, in the back of me. But I had stayed there a little longer than I should. I said Timberlake Island, Kai Island. Of course, Kai Island is no island anymore. We used to go sleep in the canal, but now it's all water. That's something I want to show you. Go back to Lake Felicity and all.
All right. Did you ever go out Lake DeKalb?
Yeah. Right. I'll call that. There's a lot of shallow water over there.
Lake DeKalb right here. Cayo Lake.
Yeah. Lake Michon too.
And then here's the island.
Yeah, that's Lake Michon. I crab in here, I didn't trawl in here. I shrimp in here. And I shrimp all this area going to the Four Leaf Bays here.
Yep.
So I was right about even here when the buy come from Four Leaf Bay to here.
All right.
I forgot the name of the point. This is Whiskey...
Whiskey Pass?
Whiskey Pass. I crawl up in there. I crawl all along the shoreline here. I crawled in Lake Pelto. Where do you call you Lake? Lake Pelto. Right here.
Yep.
You know, I shrimp quite a few different places, you know, all the way in each side of most in Mississippi. Them Channel A Islands, you know, way out there too. And what was the question?
We were talking about the chandeliers, and you wanted to show us something about Caillou Island disappearing.
Poor Lady Lake. Tap on the lid, tap on the lake. Oh, shoot. If you go next page, will it show you more?
It should.
To the east?
Yeah. Let me make sure.
No.
Yeah, here it is. So this is Lake Felicity, Lake Raccoon.
Old Lady Lake. You see these islands?
Yep.
This island was about a mile and something. It had a cut. Well, you can see this was part of it. See right there?
Uh-huh.
See that little bitty space here?
Yep.
It had shells way up there on the east side. That was one of my favorite places to catch shrimp concentrated. All the bottom of here, we still shrimp here a lot. Of course, we got to come from the corner channel way over here and go across this. This is good, but usually we do better here and around here. Something like in the white shrimp season, we do good in the north end of Lake Raccoon. But I usually like to stay up in here. This whole island, about a mile and a half, after one of the hurricanes, the next year, I'll come looking for my pass. I couldn't see nothing. See, what the heck? I'm not in the right place. Lucky I had the GPS. I look at my GPS and show you where it was. I was right in the right place. But there was no island there for me to see. From one year to the other, a mile and something island just gone. From this cut going toward Lake Barrett. All of this is gone. Now, this part of the island, on this side, on the east side of this cut, we go across here with the boats now. 3 years ago, you had to go across the land. I'll say 3 years, 5 years or so, maybe. I had to go across here with land. This is 80 more. This, they got by them on here. You can't see, it's in the water. See all this here?
Yes.
This was a buyer. Right now it's part of the bait. It's no longer the buyer.
So you've seen the deterioration of the coast?
Oh, I haven't seen the deterioration. All the islands from Timberley Island to here, all the island that was here is gone. Before my time, the guys tell me, the Indian guys tell me, that they used to ride that horse all the way up to this island. That horse. Big double rig crawls in here now. All the way across here, between Tabone, Timberley Bay and Tabone Bay. They had a ridge, they had land all the way across here. You see this body of pointage here?
Yep.
That's what built up all this here. When you're in this lake, Lake Felicity, that's one of the only places you can see big oak trees along here. A line of oak trees here. Runs about a mile, I guess. That's got high land enough. And that's where most of the residents that moved here was at. When the government gave them this land grant, they can't sell their land or nothing, but they can live on it like they want. They moved away from here.
Now, you used the term Indians. Were these Indians that lived here, anybody?
It was Indians. No, they sort of mixed Indian and white man.
All right.
Indian and black and everything.
Now, when did they move up? When did the government give them land?
Well, a long time ago. Before I came here.
All right.
I've only been here 22 years or so.
Okay. What's a double rig?
Double rigs are the big offshore boats that can pull two nets off of this boom and two nets off of this boom because he goes so far out. He pulls a single cable that bridles out. And, you know, on the bridle you have the
boards?
The boards. But you got four boards coming out on each side. When they make a pad, they clean up. Now they can only use 25-foot nets inside, which is good for us. But now most of them, the big steel double rig you would picture just being out in the Gulf from here to Mexico, is out here in the lake pushing skimmers, same as we are. Same as some little Carolina skiff. Nobody open hull that you think the guy's going fishing with. They put those aluminum to help them out. Put them big aluminum booms, and they're pushing skimmers too.
Big now, a skimmer has a net. Do you buy the net or do you make the net?
Some guys can make the net. Okay, I never could.
All right.
And it costs. That's the trouble. It costs a hell of a lot. When I tow a net, right in this lake.
Felicity, Reckless Seat?
No, right below Old Lady Lake, right there. Now there's another island. See, that was that all coming in big building, all this here, and all this was marsh. And years back, when they're working on the rigs, they had any kind of trash pipes and stuff like that, they go throw it in, on the marsh, which was nice. But now the marsh is not there no more. It's all water. So I went into it. I didn't pay attention to my GPS then. You learn by your mistakes. So I had went in maybe 15 foot or so. And I turned around right away. It was too late. When I turned around, I caught, tore my net. I mean, it tore it bad, too.
Now, you mean to tell me there was a lot of oil field buildings out here?
Yeah, well, they had a whole lot right there past by Ray. I mean, a big, I don't know how many people, 100 people could live in there.
What oil company?
Texas company. And then Cuddy Island, they got the same, this, they still have theirs. Cuddy Island, Timberlake Island, the east end of it, about halfway, really. And, but a lot of these places, like, you see a well. If there's a well standing right here, and I'm passing with my boat, I will not go any closer than about 200 feet or so from that well. Because this is where the people that build the rigs, you know, the what you call them again, the barges, the crane, the buildings, put the derrick that put the well there, the drill for all. Well, a lot of times they accidentally drop some iron, or sometimes purposely they throw the trash right overboard. So we all learn to stay away from the well, go way out there. Now, I've already caught some right here. I caught a whole Christmas tree. The big pipe and all them valves and all, right next to that camp. And I brought it to the man. I tore my trawl, but it was a brand new trawl, but it wasn't towed real bad. I come and tied up to his wall, you know, and I told him I want to bring it back to Christmas tree. You know, I said, what do you mean? He said, come take a look. You look out there. I look at had a bunch of the guys that work with him, and we managed to get it on top of the cabin. And not this cabin, on my crew boat, old crew boat. And we had it across the cabin, and he come there and they picked it up with the crane, put it on their dock. It wasn't far from me. He would say, well, we'll make up the draw. I said, no, I'm fixing my draw. I'm going trucking. I don't want nothing on this. So I didn't get nothing then. Later on, I did hook and did tear up, and they had to come and take my trawl up and pick up the iron that was on the bottom. And then they got me another trawl. So that was all right.
Now, where do you go buy your trawl?
They got a place in Hoomer. Last one I bought was there, close to where Walmart is on Grand Cayo Road. I bought there, and I bought one in July. Bought one in Golden Meadow.
How about Chauvin Hardware?
No.
All right.
That was a bar one there.
Now, when you were growing up, I mean, all of us have heard stories from our family who heard them from their grandparents. Is there one story that sticks out in your mind that your daddy told you?
Just about how my uncle used to hunt alligators. He didn't go with the line. In the marsh, the alligator makes a hole way down there, and that's where they get some diamonds stay. So when the alligator goes down there, we can see that he'd been walking on the side of the marsh. Uncle Tony. He went up moving in the roads along, that's along Lake Salvador somewhere. Anyway, or by his arms. He goes there where the hole is, and he had the big long push pole that we use to push our P-Rogues in the marsh instead of paddling. You know, you push much faster. So he takes it and he jugs down that hole, you know, because it's got a long enough push pole. Sometimes it's 15 foot down there, the alligator is. So you push him down, and then that makes him mad. So when he come up, he's holding an axe. And as soon as he come up, he hits him in the head. There's his alligator. I said to myself, hey, I've been in marsh too, but I ain't got to. If the alligator's mad because we hit him on the head with a damn push pole, when he come up, he's ready to bite us. But you got to hit him on the head with that axe point in the back of the head right there.
Well, when you first started shrimping, how was the canning industry managed? By that I mean, when you took your shrimp to a canner, what happened? How did he get into a can?
I sold to the dock.
All right.
This bring it to
the canner. Okay.
A lot of it now is frozen, I think.
All right.
Frozen and shipped up north.
Now, you've given us the name of some early canneries. Can you think of others?
Just the one to do like, what? Jeez, great, Vermont. Oh, that one. You've been around
the. Is it St. Martin?
No. I don't know, some other one. They got one in Golden Meadows, too.
All right.
Big camera.
All right. That's good enough.
Yeah.
And one other thing, when you go out shrimping, do you go by yourself or do you go with your wife?
I used to go with my wife, and then I went by myself often. And then sometimes I take a friend of mine. Now I take a relative, a young guy, starting off, and he'll go with me. Or someone that's out of work, you know, I'll take them with me. And they get one third or whatever I'll get after expenses. The boat gets a third, I'll get a third, and he get a third. A lot of guys give him one fourth. 25%. I'll give him 33. You know, 30. Because I was told that this, and from Bible Foods, you know, most of them boats will give 1/3. Now, all this is different size boat. That's for the size boat that I have, 35, 40 foot. The big boats, you might get 1/8 of the share. But they catch so much more. 1/8 the share could be a good bit of money, you know, because they, like I said, they got 4 nets back there. They trawl in 24 hours, night and day. Some sleep while others pull. So they wind up bringing in, you know, a lot of shrimp. Now, I figure my shrimp's better than their shrimp. There's two reasons. One, they out in the Gulf. They got saltier water, salt water iodine. That don't taste as good. Second, I'll go out there. Right now, I've been going 2 nights and then coming in. They might go a week, 10 days. They lice up and everything, but I've seen the shrimp at Rouse's and, you know, different places that the shrimp don't look nothing like our shrimp that we just caught, say, last night, this morning, or night before last. And now, naturally, I got pumps on there. I wash them real good. And you heard what I said about my ice. I carry a lot of ice. And I re-ice when I come in. It's a lot of extra work, but it's a better quality of shrimp. The guys used to say, oh, I like your shrimp. I was in Bayagor. He said, I bought some from a man a little further down the bayou, but he didn't have the nice shrimp like you. I guess you caught him in a different place. I said, that man caught him right next to me. It was in Lake Salvador. And I said, he caught him right next to me. But If you leave them on the deck too long, you can't leave them on the deck too long. This one was crawling because the sun, you know, sun will make them get bad. And you ice up with a lot of ice. Just don't put a little bit of ice. Because when you come back, if you don't ice up a lot of ice, they can be turning on you. Now, shrimping at night is better for the shrimp too. The sun don't hit you. You know. But we still try to clean as fast as we can. 20 minutes, half hour at most. And then I wash a lot. That's something else. How much do you wash? We wash, you know, in a full container of water with a basket going down in it. We naturally put salt in it to make the small fish come up. And we use like a tennis racket to throw the fish away. And then we'll bring the water up, bring it in, shake it just a little bit. And then we dump some fish and mostly shrimp into the cleaning table I had back then. So there's a little lot to shrimping. Now where you go shrimping, when you go shrimping, which way the wind is blowing, how was the current last night? All that makes a lot of difference, you know, to where the shrimp would be. You know, they'll stay lead shore. Hmm. And wherever the current is. But then you got favorite places that the shrimp travel. Now the GPS. Like, we can't see the islands a lot of places. They got passes that go through the lake. The lake is not all one depth. And neither is the bays. You know, that's why they got buoys in the bays for them big deep drive boats to pass. In the bay they have, you can see green buoys and red buoys. So, on my GPS, I can look and see. See, there's the lake. This would be the lake. And I could see where that buoy had passed here and went this way and went that way. I got an arrow on my GPS. It shows where I'm at. And I'll stay right where that pass is in the deepest part. Because when the shrimp leave to go out in so many fathoms of water and lay their eggs, I go exactly where they went. I can follow them through the lake. You know, it's like so much deeper there. There's so many things about it, you know. And then sometimes the shrimp will go in between waters, not all the way to the top. You know, that's what's good about skimmers. We catch from the top all the way to the bottom. With our bottom net, we used to catch, if you in deep water, it's real important. We used to catch, but say, 4 foot from the bottom, our net would come. You had corks on it, you know. It didn't come all the way to the top. So we knew that. So we tried to get it to come high. We used to put these jackups on our trawl doors and extension to make them go up high. And then we used to put extra heavy floats on our net to pull it up. So, you know, so many things we did. Now that one guy's trying to get where he's trying to stay off of the top, just the opposite. The jellyfish, when they hit, if they're real bad, you can't trawl. You know, they'll load up your net, you never pick it up. They stay on the top. So if you get in between, say, 2-3 feet from the top, on down, you'll catch a shrimp. So he's trying to get one that'll be in between. And fish, you know, you gotta watch it, the passage close to the Gulf. A lot of times, I already hit fish with my whole 50-foot net from one end to the other and it was full. I don't know how many times you're gonna load it up, a big dump truck, the amount of fish I had in there. What I could do, no way to pick it up. I had to dive and go by the tail, open it up, and slowly pull and wheel wash till the fish come up. And the shrimp and whatever I had in it. You lose everything.
Well, speaking of loss, you've already mentioned Carmandale. which is, was a community that's gone.
Gone.
I'm going to assume there was a community at the temple. At least a few houses. Gone.
Gone.
Can you name some other communities? We know that the shrimp drying platforms are gone.
Gone.
You showed us two Texaco facilities that...
One of them is gone.
So can you name any others that you can think of?
We got some around Body Lodge, but I don't know.
The
I'm
name?
Not familiar. I've been there, but I don't know too much about it. Just over here, that everybody moved away from Lake Felicity, where he used to live, where that high ground is. They moved further up here. Like, and then later on, we're going to have to move out of here and move further up again. Because, you know, we're losing our coastline. If they only would do that, the levees to the Gulf.
Morganza to the Gulf.
Yeah, Morganza to the Gulf thing. That's the only thing that's safe. And over here, every one of these buyers has a lot, except us. And you notice, we're back in Lake Felicity. We're back in Lake Felicity. Yeah. I want to show you what it looks like.
Wait a minute, we got to get the right map.
I want to go all the way to the Gulf from Lake Felicity.
All right, here's Lake Felicity. This is Terrebonne Bay.
Yeah. This is the Gulf. That water's coming in here. There's nothing to stop it here. To believe it. Yeah, most of this is gone too. All the way through here.
You're right.
Lake Felicity's here. Lake Chien here. Through here. All of this. And then you see how it goes into it, the point of Chien right here. That when the waves are coming in, we get it the whole way.
This is 665.
Yep.
And right at the boundary of Terrebonne and Lafourche Parish, and here's Lake Felicity.
Yeah, you see this?
Yep.
All this is gone. This city is gone. Except for right here, they got a little bit. But in Barre too, all of this going straight out to the Gulf.
Well, knowing that you're at risk living here, why do you live here?
I live here because I lived on the bay all my life. Remember, when I was born and a child, I was on a houseboat. In fact, a good while back, I was looking at a Boats and Harbor catalog, and they had fiberglass lash barges. That's the one they pick up and put in the boat, in the ship. And when they go over there, they put them overboard and then bring a whole bunch of barges together down south of America somewhere. But anyway, it was 31 by 62. Yeah, 31 by 62. 62 or 64, I forgot. And it was a heavy built barge that had big wings. It was 14 foot high. And it was actually 28,000 for it. You know, had a little bit of minor damage. But I found the glass, I could fix it. The cost of new was way over $300,000. So I could have got this for $28,000. Well, that made a houseboat. Not no flimsy, little bitty house. My boat got 16 layer fiberglass. Most boats got about 5. Mine's a little heavy, they all say that. Looks like your boat would come up another 2 feet if you wouldn't have put so much weight on it. But I was trying to build a Titanic, I guess you can say.
Well, we're in a camp that you mentioned to me was some sort of oil company.
In Grand Isle. They got boats from the rafters all the way down to the concrete flat. This was made for Grand Isle in Key West, Florida. You know, they built these for a hurricane to withstand 200 mile an hour wind. Lucky we had never had.
Who built this?
I don't know.
Did it come? I mean, did
this was built. This was in 47. You know, I got the date on the thing. It was 47. build this.
And it was built at Grand Isle?
At Grand Isle, with 50 other ones.
For whom?
50 or 60, for Humble Oil Company, which is Grant, which Exxon.
All right. How did you get it from Grand Isle to here?
I told you I bought that old crew boat.
All right.
You wouldn't think you could buy a crew boat, 2671 Detroit diesel. How much you think I'd pay for?
I have no idea.
$5,000.
Wow.
You can't buy a speed hull for $5,000. But I bought it then because, you know, it's old. I had to do some work on the bottom. One of the engines, the clutch was bad. I had to work on that. But anyway, it was pretty. But boy, that was a scary experience. I had this man's barge, a friend of mine, Mr. Plazon. He goes way back. He used to bring in, what you call it, rum. You know how they go. But he used to go from here through the Florida, Ochicoochee waterways in Florida, all the way to Carolina and shrimp. And then back to Mexico and all. He shrimp all over. His son's got big seahawks. But anyway, he told me about this friend of his. His cousin of his had this barge, nice looking barge, but it was about 75 foot long, you know. I said, good, it's the right size for what I want. I had the foundation built down here for me to build it. Boy, I said, working, trying to build a house way out here, I said, it's going to take me a long time. And then I look in the paper, camps on Grand Isle for sale. On bid, closed bid, you know. I said, I'm going to get this. So they had a guy in his album. He said, I bought one of those. He says, I paid $14,000. I told him which one I'm getting. Oh, he said, you ain't never going to get that one. Maybe $18,000, $20,000. I said, no way. I ain't putting that kind of money on a house. It's a sealed bid, so I bid on it. They had the thing, didn't call me, thank me for my bid, but, you know, my bid was too far under. 2 weeks later, we have to let you have it. I bid $7,260 on this hurricane-proof house. Then I moved it over here. I took the barge. I went there and Nick Martinola met me right there with the airplane base. I seen all kind of giant-sized equipment come. I said, oh, hell, I won't be able to get my barge. And I seen all field equipment coming in. It wasn't all field equipment. It was Nick. He grabbed that barge. He pulled it up with this big winch, a giant winch truck that he has. And then he rolled the house on top. I had taken him over here, and I had shown him. It slipped there. Whenever he caught the house, he had to catch it with his tractor, the truck, on that end. He had the thing already on his truck when they got there. He had it facing that way. I said, well, how are you going to get it there now? You caught it on the wrong end. He had land. I didn't have this other, all these piling and water crane. I hadn't had that built yet. So he said, we'll get it. So we'll come over here. He did the same thing. He pulled that square front barge and that dirt, just like you take a bulldozer and go through and dirt build way up high. That winches and then big cables strong enough, they pulled that thing square, roll up that dirt that high. I didn't think that was possible. And so the next day was shrimping season. He said, he said, we're going to have to park it in the people's yard over there. So they drove the truck with my house on it in the yard. And then he said, we're going to put it up here tomorrow. I say, you explain where you're going to put it. You're going to take one of his low bed trailers and put it down here, out on the side of the road and all. And you're going to roll, you're going to back up with his tractor and go all the way across there. Then you're going to lift up the other one, and then slide it over this way. I couldn't think of anybody being able to do that, but sure enough, that's what he did. And you say you're going to stay here? I said, no. I said, tomorrow is the first day of shrimping season. You know what you're doing. I know what I want to do. So I'm going shrimping. So I come back. There's this pigeon house sitting on top of it. It was white. Didn't look good at all. I repainted twice. Of course, it was a painted light green. And I painted this rose color.
Now, how did you get it from Grand Isle to
I went through Bayarigo, around where the pass is, yep, into the bay, you know,
yep,
not Barataria Bay, but the Caminata Bay.
Yep.
Okay, I come up Caminata Bay to the west, and I called the East-West Canal. That was the East Canal I come in. And then I come to Bayarigo, you know, and you got to make a round on there, and there's the bridge. Now, that's where I got real scared. Came around and that current, I didn't judge my current right. The current was coming out so strong that it had turned me sideways with the barge, and I was coming with the house way up there to smash into the bridge. Boy, I put, lucky they had two motors. I put one in reverse and one forward, and I managed just before I hit, it got into the pass where I was supposed to go through.
That's at Leeville?
At Leeville.
The green
monster.
They
got a new bridge.
Yeah, but then the
green they would have had a new bridge much sooner. So it comes around, you know, from Bayarigo, you know, you got to get in Bayarigo, go 500 feet or so, and then you take this little bayou, and it goes back into the West Canal, coming this way. And that's where the graveyard, you know, where,
yep,
all that's washed out, the people's grave going in the water. I took the West Canal and I come in and I made it. I was tired. I mean, I stayed so long without sleep. Two nights and a day or something like that. And I got in Lake Felicity. I said, I can't make it in. I'm going to pass out before I make it in. I said, I'm going to anchor out. I'll go in there and take my aim. I look up at that house on top of that truck. It's like taking this pencil and throwing it out of the truck. I said, I got the anchor out. I got to do it. So I dropped the anchor. I said, I don't know where I'll be. I hope I'm not all the way in the Gulf by the morning, you know, because I have a long ways to come in. Nick will be looking for me. So sure enough, I had drifted back maybe a half a mile or so. That's all. It must have caught something. And I was able to stop the motor. I had the power to start the motor and come back in. And then I pushed in. When I got here, I didn't have more than a foot between the boats. All the boats were parked that way then. Not alongside of the body. It was, the back end was sticking out. And I just barely made it. And Nick, when he seen that, was a brand new truck he had. He was worried about his truck. So that was an experience. But like I said about those in Leeville, where all the graves are in the water now, everything washed out, you know. When it was 11 now, it's still washed out. I was catfishing in Bodies Islands, and it was nighttime. And I was coming along, and fish, and it was next to some big trees. They had a big oak tree, and the roots were sticking way out because everything was washed underneath. And I looked down there, there's a little chalon, they call it, a little square, like a aluminum hull, you know, but it's wood. And there it was sticking out. I said, I got me a little, I start trying to pull it out, it was stuck. I'll get the mud out. So I had a paddle, and I took, and I sure enough started getting the mud out. But then when I got to the frame, I pulled, and there's the skull.
Ooh.
Now this was a big oak tree. That was on Black Prince Island, they called it. Must have been one of Lafitte's men. That big oak tree, and he was right underneath that oak tree. You know, when they put all that stuff back in there.
Do you ever remember a cemetery called Chinese Graveyard?
I heard of that, but I don't know where it was.
All right. How about Alombro Cemetery?
No, where is that?
Well, we've been doing this for about an hour and a half, and that's generally where we say thank you very much.
Oh, okay.
But we would like for you to continue to think about this, maybe in a couple weeks after shrimp season. Come back and just catch up on some things maybe you think about at that time. Would that be all right?
Yeah, that's fine. I've got a better idea.
All right.
If I don't have somebody come with me, then you two guys come with me shrimp. Then you can really see what it's like.
Well, it's been really delightful. Yeah.